My guest, Craig Brocato, shares his story of the years that he spent in the closet, denying who he really was, and how it led him down a path of drug addiction and destructive behaviors. He also shares how he found redemption and his way to a happy and fulfilling life. Filled with a great career, loving children and grandchildren, and a healthy relationship. Craig works for a corporate beauty company and is a coach. Craig Brocato, welcome to the Authentic Gay Man podcast. I'm really glad you're here, buddy.
Thank you for having me, Maddox. It's good. It's so good to see you as always.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, just to tell the audience a little bit about how we know each other. Actually, Craig is a coach, professional coach, but he has agreed to come on today and wear his personal hat rather than his coach hat. And we have known each other for a little bit less than a year. I had entered into a coaching program, a group coaching program, and in the very beginning, we did a detailed assessment, and Craig was the coach that was responsible for debriefing the coachees concerning their assessment. And it was a fascinating process. He was very good at this debrief on this assessment. It was very enlightening. And it was a good enough conversation that that's kind of how we got acquainted and became friends. And here we are almost a year later, and he's a guest on the podcast. So what would you like to add to that, Craig?
Yeah, no, I love it. It was, and when we did your particular debrief, the Energy Leadership Index is what it was called, and we did connect instantly, and it was fascinating just getting to share that space and go through that process. It's really empowering for us as gay men to empower each other and connect on so many different levels.
Yeah, so, I agree. I agree. So let's just jump right in. Yeah. So my first question for you is, what does being an authentic gay man mean to you?
What does that mean? What it means for me is being just who I am, that I'm not any one stereotypical thing. I'm just my own self. Connection with self is authentic. I think how I go about my life professionally, personally, in my relationships, romantic, platonic, that it's just who I am. I spent so many years not being that, and not even knowing really probably who I was. I think the higher self knows, but, so when you ask that question, it's really, you know, authentic is just the raw who you really are and letting people know you rather than having that mask of who you think they want to see.
Yes, beautiful. I agree completely. And there was one thing that you said that really caught my ear, and that was not even really knowing. And I hadn't thought of that, but I too can look back at a time when I wasn't authentic. But I wasn't aware that I wasn't authentic.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah,
and it was a defining moment in realizing that I had lived a lot of my life locked away in a fortress where I didn't let people see me for who I really was. I didn't let people know me. In a lot of social circles, I actually would work pretty hard to be invisible.
Right.
And yet, if you'd have asked me if I was an authentic person, I would have told you yes. And then there was that moment when I realized, oh, no, I wasn't. Yeah. I wasn't. So yeah. Good call on that. I'm so glad you called that out, because that hadn't entered into any of my other conversations. And that's good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just real. You know, I mean, and authenticity is also honesty, is really being just truly honest.
Yeah, removing all the social masks.
Yeah,
that we have a tendency to wear, the social masks that we learned to be safe as we came up through our childhood. So speaking of this, I know you have a unique and interesting story about what has brought you full circle to this place of authenticity. So let's dive in and share with our listeners your story. We want to hear the good, the bad, the ugly, and then the triumphant, and you know, the part where you made it to the other side of this particular story. We all have stories that we're trying to get to the other side of, and we'll do that till we pass. But
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think like we had briefly talked about before, is that so my story includes addiction. So that's me personally. So, you know, going from a Catholic upbringing, with a very macho father, we could not be gay, or I could not be gay in the family I grew up in. And by the time I was 18, I was already into cocaine and alcohol and marijuana and sleeping with girls. And I got a girl pregnant, and I had my first child at 18, second one at 21. And then I was also divorced at 21, and she left and she was gone. And so here I was, 21 years old, with two little girls, you know, a 6 month old and a 3 year old. And so at that time, this is, by now this is the early 90s. And so, men didn't have custody of their children back then. And I had my kids, so I couldn't be gay then. So when we're talking about being authentic, I could not be authentic. Like you said, would I have thought I was authentic? Yeah, because I was a father. I ran a business. I worked, you know, 12, 14 hours a day to take care of them and did all that. But I couldn't be really who I was. So fast forwarding that, I married another woman. We were married for 18 years. And but I was gay the whole time. I knew I was gay. And through that journey, you know, I cheated on her several times with men, got into drugs. The drugs sprinkled throughout, you know, times where I did them, sometimes I didn't do them, but the drug use got really, really heavy towards the end of that relationship, and finding myself in really bad places with bad people doing bad things, right? And I think that most gay men can I hope they can identify with, you know, the deception that we put into ourselves, the deception that we put into our loved ones about who we really are, and the complete separation from self, that I'm going to be who I think you think I should be, right? So that separation from my identity of, oh, I'm a straight guy, or oh, I'm a dad, or no, I'm a gay man who happens to be a father, and lived a life of not being authentic out of fear. So, fast forwarding from that, you know, I think after I ended that marriage, then I came out, and so then I have lived authentically gay ever since that time. And the drug addiction did not go away right then, though. It got worse again. And every time I would go on these binges or these escapades, more and more trauma. I would walk away with more. So it wasn't bad enough I was shameful of being just a gay man, right? At 18, back in the 80s with the AIDS epidemic and just full of fear, that here I was now, you know, pushing probably 40 by this time, and still creating more and more trauma by the things I was doing, which led to a larger separation of self and led to absolute destruction in my life. I didn't lose things like a lot of people talk about in the recovery community. That wasn't my story, but I have been arrested. Not for drugs, but I was on them, right? For various little, I mean, nothing, no felonies, but that's not really the point. So moving into that. So when I finally did get sober, then my life began to change, and a lot of work, a lot of therapy, a lot of meditation and connecting, and really just being authentic and honest with myself about creating my own relationship with myself. And so that's kind of where I've gone through this journey. When I first got sober, I was also a substance abuse counselor. And when I would work in treatment centers, one of my friends was a clinical director, and she allowed me to create LGBT groups. And I thought I had already gotten sober. So I had gone into the rooms of AA with other gay men, gay A particularly. And then I realized I thought I was just this unique individual that no other person had gone through and done the things that I had done. And that wasn't true. There is a whole bunch of us just like me. I wasn't unique. My story wasn't unique. Maybe parts of it were. But when I was a counselor on that end of it, I was just blown away by even the statistics of what this looks like for us. I believe it's 18.7 million people, LGBT people in the United States, that are addicted to drugs, alcohol, tobacco of some sort. Gay and lesbian are more than twice as likely, bisexual three times as likely, and transgender five times as likely. So in our whole community, we are just so much higher. So, and I think what that rough estimate is about 9% of the population. So those are just numbers, but what the numbers mean to me was that there are many of us that have led these lives of deception or are living these lives of deception, thinking that you can't have a loving relationship, that you can't be intimate in same-sex relationships, and using these substances to go in and out of these situations that without the drugs, I probably would never have done half of the stuff that I did, especially sexually. So, So that's a lot, I know, but.
Well, it's kind of an overview. You said something in a previous conversation that I want to have you recount. You said something like the substance abuse was not the cause. It was the physical manifestation of the cause. And so I'd like for you to speak to that. And I think that perhaps maybe you can pull out specific aspects of your story. We got the overview, pull out some specific aspects that the listener might particularly, you know, get value out of hearing.
Thank you for bringing that up. I think when we talked about that, the manifestations of the drug abuse and the alcohol abuse and these terrible relationships, that was the manifestation. That was not what was going on, right? That was not the weeds. That was not the cause of any of this. It was, that's just what happened because of the actions I took. Speaking to the roots of it, right? We go back to that, first of all, deception with self, lying to ourselves, lying to myself. So clearly, if I'm going to be lying to myself, the manifestation of that is probably going to be having dishonest relationships, when I look in the mirror, not even being honest with who I am. And so the manifestation of that is, I also believe, is that separation from higher self, right? So it's that egoic space that we get into as human beings, and we're not the connection to who we really are. And who I really am was the gay man that was too afraid to be gay and live the life I live today.
In your separation from self, mm-hmm. The deception, I mean, there's usually an underlying feeling that drives us to not want to feel that feeling. And that's when the drugs and alcohol and sex and all that come into play. What was the underlying meaning that was, you know, the driving force, because we as human beings, we have a tendency to, we apply a meaning to most experiences. And so you're leading this deceptive life. You have this complete separation of self. What was the meaning that you, that thing that we do where we make it mean something about us? What was the meaning that you applied?
Yeah, it's a great question. For me, shame was the beginning of it. Being raised Catholic was that you're going to burn in hell. So shame obviously was
you're not okay. You're wrong.
You're not good enough. You're not like everybody else.
Different.
Yeah. God hates fags, like all that stuff. Right. And so, that's the deception right there. Right. That, I didn't have the wherewithal at that time, to come out to do that. And, I think being a single parent, and especially at the time when all that happened, you know, this is like 30 years ago now, but when that all happened, the world was so different. So speaking to that, like, yeah, what was really going on? It was the deception. It was the, I hate me, a lot of self-hatred, a lot of self-hatred,
that self-loathing, perhaps
self-loathing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All that stuff that I hated that I was gay. I hated that, I wanted just to stay in the straight world and just, you know, have the wife, the house, the 2.5 kids, blah, 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 blah. And I kind of did do that, but it was not authentic. Right. Not to say that my second wife, she is an amazing lady. So that's not the case. And we had a lot of good times, but in all fairness, I was not honest. Right. And it took me years and years and years to get to the place of, even when I came out fully gay, I was still shameful. I was still lying to myself. So it didn't end right then.
Which one, this is just intuitively coming to me, had the biggest impact on you, being dishonest with others or being dishonest with yourself?
That's a great question. Thanks for asking that. Myself. Yeah.
Yeah.
What I found out was, when I finally was fully out and I was honest about my drug addictions and I was honest about what I had, the things I have done, I was shocked at the amount of support and love around me for my family and friends. I did not think that it was going to go that way. But it did. And, from my children to, you know, my family, my parents. I did not expect it.
So back to that, we assign a meaning to almost everything. When your family and friends showed up so supportive, what meaning, and when I say meaning, a meaning that it's something that you made it mean about you, what meaning did you assign to that?
Say that again, I'm sorry.
When your whole family, friends, everybody in your life showed up supportive, what did you make that mean about you?
Oh, what did I make that mean about me? I think, you know, almost like a sigh of relief. That's what it felt about me. I was still uncomfortable with it.
Can you put it into words though? You know, like an I am statement, perhaps. All these people in your life show up completely loving and supportive. What did that mean about you? I am.
Yeah, I am not bad. I am a lovable person. I am capable of having a relationship with the man that I want. I'm capable of being a human being. My sexual orientation it's just a part of who I am, right? And it was like this sigh of, oh, I can be me.
Well, and I want to point out that you're very blessed to have that experience, because we know there are listeners out there right now that have gone through something similar to what you're describing, and their family and friends perhaps didn't show up with such a loving and supportive energy. So you are very, very blessed to
have had that. You're right. I'm really blessed. And I think for me personally is that I knew because I was older, I didn't do it young. So I was to the point where if they didn't like it, because I had suffered, the emotional pain was so deep. The trauma was so much of the things that I had gone through and carried that weight of not being who I am, that I didn't give a fuck. So if they weren't going to accept me, I was at the point where I was ready to walk away. And I've seen many, many men and women in our community that what you just said is, yeah, they weren't blessed enough to have the outcome that I did. But I had to be prepared for that very thing, because, I remember, you know, the first person I came out to was my little sister, and she knew, and she didn't care, and she loved me. Right. And the second person, other than obviously the men I had been with, but was my daughters when I came out to them. And my youngest daughter is also, she's a lesbian, and they got teary eyed and they were like, so happy. They were just so happy that their dad was just who he is. And then from there on, it went into like professional areas, my parents and stuff like that. But it wasn't just like this thing of, oh, today now I'm better. Today now I'm authentic. It was a long process, and it was little bits of, let's say, coming out. It was little bits of healing. It was little bits of finding myself through those processes. It wasn't just like I woke up one day and here I go.
Well, the separation from self that you described was serious and long-term. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to just suddenly be back in your beingness, and that sense of separation is going to be magically gone overnight just because you said, hey, world, I'm gay.
Right, right.
You know, there's a whole process of completely getting to know yourself, maybe for the first time.
I mean, it was absolutely the first time, because, you know, from a young child all the way up, just growing up with that, I had to be somebody else, right? And that was my experience. So when we're speaking of that, like, who am I? And what do I want? And what do I bring to the table? And what are the kinds of relationships I want to have in my life, right? When we're talking about authentic, I think the friendship you and I have is, from day one, has been very authentic, very honest, right? And so those are the types of, I don't know how else to describe, but those are the types of relationships that I foster in my life. If they're not that way, I don't engage, which is fine. There's no right or wrong, good or bad. It's just the way it is. And, and it took me a long time. And then, you know, I was married to a man after that, and he was abusive and all kinds of stuff. But I began to at least, know more about myself out of that relationship.
Well, and that was probably part of your process. You probably weren't going to come out of a lifetime of separation from self and, you know, drug abuse and suddenly land in like the ideal relationship. It was probably part of, he was what I like to refer to as a character in the movie of your life that was helping you heal.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, speaking to the masks and what that looked like, that in that marriage, it looked like we had the perfect life. It looked that way. Everybody thought that, but it wasn't that way. And once again, it brought me back to learning about self, learning about my connection with me, of being able to give up that life I had. and leave it. And then healing from that. And what's been so beautiful is now the relationship I have, it's not based on any material stuff. It's not based on anything but connection. He's very connected to his higher self. I am. And we both put into our relationship as whole men. We don't come in broken. Not that we're perfect by any stretch. But it's just such a different mindset that I've never had in the other.
You aren't looking to each other to complete you.
No, boy, that's a scary statement, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yep. But we know a lot of people see it that way. And there was certainly a time in my life when I saw it that way. I was literally seeking somebody to complete me. Before I got wise enough and educated enough to understand how that all works. I'm intuitively being prompted to back up a little bit. I want to, I think that there are perhaps some listeners that are thinking, yeah, he got to the other side of this, but what I've done is so much worse than what he's describing, you know? And so I'm wondering if you have a particularly, a story that you would be willing to share that is particularly a story that you felt maybe the most intense shame about, that you were able to let go of, no longer feel that sense of shame. But from a standpoint of, somebody out there needs to hear that no matter how bad it was for them, there's still redemption. There's none of this, he didn't do nearly as yucky shit as I did.
Right.
And so if you've got something that can really drive that home, if you're willing to.
Yeah.
To dive deep and.
I will share. And I believe sitting in the problem is not really a solution. So a lot of times I won't go into it, but for this conversation, I will. I think, how bad did it get? Really? And so
because it's relevant in that how far you had to come back. Right.
So yeah, right. I'll talk about some of the lows of being so addicted to drugs and alcohol and pills and meth and all of it at once. And at the end of my marriage to my second wife, I don't know how I worked every day, but I worked. But then at night I would wander the streets. I remember several times she found me like on street corners. She's like, what, 3-4 in the morning, what are you doing? And I would just be sitting there. But little did she know what I had been doing prior to that. I would go into these clubs of these sex clubs and these and do enormous amounts of drugs. And I was drugged and raped and just really lewd, disgusting behavior. Right. And so those were the really shadow sides of the things that I would do. And many times, not just one time.
I want to make a comment. You just said shadow sides of things. And for our listeners that may not be really aware of that concept, shadow is anything that we hide, repress, or deny. It's a darkness inside of ourselves. And we all have darkness inside of ourselves. We are all, duality is a real thing. Yeah. We have light and darkness in each one of us. And the thing about shadow, though, is the more we hide, deny, and repress it, and the more it stays in darkness, the stronger it becomes. And so the way we dispel our shadows, our darkness, is by bringing it out into the light of consciousness.
Right.
So for you listeners that are not as familiar with that concept, that's what Craig is doing right now in his story. He's bringing these dark stories that we have a tendency to keep quiet and a secret. He's bringing it out into the light of consciousness. Now, he's already done this previously. This isn't his first time to talk about this out loud. Yeah, I'm sure of that. This is an aspect of bringing shadow into the light of consciousness, because it can't survive in the light of consciousness.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I love the way you just described that. And you're right. And when you are quiet about it, and that really is part of that story, right? So it compounded. It got worse and worse and worse and worse and worse and bigger and bigger and bigger.
It's like a cancer. It eats us up from the inside out.
Truly. And the more and more separation from self, the more and more thought I could never, ever come out of this. The people I've hurt, the way I've hurt myself, you know, that I just never thought there would ever be a redemption. I never thought that could be something. You know, when I lived and did those things, it was not, those things are not my higher self, but they are experiences that I've gone through. They were complete separation. And on some level, you know, the dark side of me probably wanted to experience those things because I had been so, what's a good word? I don't want to say in the closet, but metaphorically speaking, you know, hidden from being myself. And yeah, so those kinds of stories, you know, and then even when those stories got past, it wasn't like unicorns and rainbows with the dating world at first either. And many, many trials and tribulations. But yeah, I mean, I think when you want to resonate with maybe some of the listeners around this is that I would love to all let people know that they're not the only ones, that. Because I thought I was the only one, you know, I thought I was the only one. I thought I was, and then after I did those things, I thought I was dirty. I thought I was not lovable, not likable. And that goes on and on and on of that inner turmoil. And so, you know, when you ask for a particular story, right, that people, maybe have done worse things. I don't know, or maybe not as bad of things. And maybe even taking the judgment out of good or bad, they're just experiences. And there seems to me that there's a lot of us out there that could use this kind of support and hear and have these conversations.
Well, and redemption, you make a really good point. You know, I wanted to reel in as many listeners as possible and having them relate. But the truth is, redemption doesn't have anything to do with the severity of the offense. Redemption is available to every human being, regardless of what they've done. Yeah, when you take the bad and badder,
yeah,
quality out of it. So I am assuming, and would love to know more about, I'm assuming that this process involved a certain amount of forgiveness.
It did. It had
please,
to.
Please speak to that.
Yeah, the forgiveness. And so that, you know, that the forgiveness brings me into also that intimacy, right? The intimacy issue of intimacy with self. Of being having that in intimacy internally of when I did come through these processes, how did I redeem myself as I stopped doing the stuff I did? I didn't engage and I don't and haven't for years in any kinds of escapades like that. And forgiveness is, I think it's ongoing. I think the for myself, that what I've learned is we're never there. You're never done.
That bears repeating. I love that. You know, forgiveness is a process. It's an ongoing process. Rarely is it. I mean, maybe in certain situations there's a once and done, but I kind of tend to think more often than not, it's what you're saying. It's an ongoing process.
Yeah. And self-forgiveness, right? And then forgiving my parents for raising me, thinking that being gay was bad, from the bullies in school, that would call me gay, or, you know, of, you know, a lot of my career, I was a hairstylist and a straight hairstylist. So, oh no, he's really gay. Like, and so, forgiving other people, right. For being so cruel about who I was, because I couldn't be truly myself. So forgiving them, forgiving myself for, putting that burden on other people, you know, it wasn't theirs to carry. It was mine. And, so that was part of, that is part of the forgiveness process. And, you know, the best way I can talk about that also is it's a living amends, right? So it's when we have these things that have gone on, or I've had these things that have gone on, that the way I conduct myself now and have, and I will continue to do, is my living amends to myself and to those around me, that that I show up better, that my heart is more open, and that I'm actually capable. And the other thing I would like to bring up too, I know we've talked about this, Maddox, was, you know, in gay relationships, I didn't know that you could actually have intimacy. And I'm not talking about sex. I'm talking about intimacy with another man, with the same sex partner.
Emotional intimacy.
Right. Like I didn't know we could do that. And I knew you could do that with women, right? Because that was just, it was society told you could, they would be your wife or all that kind of stuff. But a man with a man, right? Having a husband, being intimate, or not even married, just having an intimate relationship. That piece of it has been huge for me, because being able to first forgive myself, show up fully, and be intimate, right? And actually connect with my boyfriend. And we have that kind of relationship. And I didn't think, when I was young, I didn't think I would ever be 52 years old and have that. Like, I never thought. And if you would have asked me this, like, you know, 30 years ago, I would have said, there's no way in hell. Like, men can get married. Now we can adopt kids or have kids with surrogates, or, I mean, the world is just so different than it used to be.
Thankfully.
Thankfully. So the intimacy doesn't just happen with romantic relationships. It's intimate friendships.
Oh, I'm a single person. There's no romance in my life right now, but I have several relationships that include a pretty high amount of intimacy, and it's variety. It's not just gay men. You know, I have straight male and female friends. I just got off the phone an hour ago with a straight friend of mine that the level of intimacy between us is just amazing. It's just like,
we're very close. What does intimacy mean to you? What does intimacy mean to you? Because I'm always curious to what people, I have my version of it. And I wonder, you know, for the listeners, I wonder when we just say this word. And I think authenticity is probably part of it. But I'm just curious what would be relatable to other people and wanting to achieve that. And because the intimacy is also not, is the coming to one, right? Coming to oneness within, removing the separation from self and that deception. And so, yeah, I'm just curious, like, what is it for you?
You know, if I were going to put this in the form of a visual, metaphorically, I would say this is standing before another human being and opening the chest plate up and completely exposing my heart in its most vulnerable form, and trusting that they will honor that and respect that and not take advantage of the fact that I have made myself completely vulnerable. Intimacy, yes, it's letting somebody through all of the the armor and the fortresses and the shields and the varying different things that we walk through life with, and letting them know us at our deepest level, know us at the level that we know ourselves, if we've taken the time to build that relationship with ourselves. Intimacy is hard when we don't have intimacy with ourselves. You know, you described complete separation, and then you came out of that and you got in a marriage that turned out to be abusive and was fraught with different problems. And now you've progressed to a relationship that is much more authentic and healthier.
Yeah.
And what that depicts is we don't come out of a time where we have complete separation with ourselves and just suddenly, you know, come out and poof, it's all over with, and we get in this wonderful relationship. Our relationships always reflect back to us our own level of health with our relationship with ourselves.
Right. Yeah.
And so you had to go through a process from complete separation to complete being reunited with yourself.
Right.
And it's not like a switch flicking. It's like a rheostat where the volume was down so low you couldn't hear it, and then you turned it up a little bit and up a little bit and up a little bit, and finally you got to full volume. But during that period where you went from no volume to full volume, you had to go through some shit and have some scary experiences and relationships, because you were developing your relationship with you. And so the people we attract are only going to be as healthy and connected to themselves as we are to ourselves. And they're only going to be connected to us to the extent that we are connected to us. Life mirrors us back to us. Other people mirror us back to us. And your story, as you've gone through it, completely validates that concept.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah, yeah, it does. And, you know, something that you just said really stuck out with me when we were talking about it, the word intimacy. And you were talking about opening your heart space up and just being fully there and hoping that people didn't take advantage of that or do that. And I think that space right there, I think is because so many of us gay men have done that and been judged, or maybe our authenticity or our intimacy was not respected from other gay men relationships, whatever. And those walls go back. Hence now all gay men are jerks, all blah, 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 whatever those.
Those are meanings that we tend to apply that I referred to earlier. Yes, right. I've been there and done that. You know, I opened the heart plate when I first came out and somebody plunged a dagger into my heart, and I shut that plate and applied a meaning that, you know, gay men are not safe. And I lived from that place of gay men not being safe for nearly four decades before I saw the light. You know, one of the things I've come to realize about intimacy is, for most of us, I think, I've interviewed a lot of gay men, for most of us, it is something that our beingness, our heart craves. Intimacy, we crave intimacy, and at the same time, we fear it. It's a double-edged sword. Yes. It's a coin with two sides.
100%.
There's this craving on one side, and there's this complete fear on the other side.
It's so scary. And you know, that. So what it reminds me of is, so then we meet men that have also been hurt. So now their hearts are closed off. And so now we're trying. So now you have two closed off people trying to connect, and there's just no connection. Right. And so what, maybe it's physical or whatever, but
like a snowball's chance in hell.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
and I think that most of us could probably relate with that.
The one beautiful thing about authenticity, about vulnerability, is it tends to be a polarizer. If you really show up vulnerably and authentically, you will send the people that can't do that or won't do that in the opposite direction. Just naturally, they will not be drawn to you. If they're not authentic and vulnerable, you are scary to them. And so you have to know, the more we lean into this vulnerability and authenticity, it's going to send a bunch of people away. But I've learned to realize that's a beautiful thing, because what that does is it clears away the crowd and the clutter so I can more readily see and spend time with the people that
you're right. And that's the fear that we get into, especially in the coming out process, is as we are authentic, a lot of times those people will disappear, right? And that's scary.
It is scary.
And so then,
if you know that that's going to happen up front, and that's why I share this, you got to know as you lean into this vulnerability that there are going to be people that it's going to make very uncomfortable and they're going to go away. Mm-hmm. But you need to see that, in my opinion, I came to view that as a positive thing.
I agree with you. I agree with you. And what is so fascinating is all of those fear-based thoughts. When you actually are in a friendship or a romantic situation and you actually begin to have that with someone else, when they show you who they really are, it is, and you know, there's probably fear because that's what happens, that I'm going to judge or not think of. But I will say, like in my relationships now, whether it's with my kids or my grandchild, my boyfriend, any, you know, coworkers, anything like that, the more authentic people are, the more vulnerable and the more intimate they are about who they are, it's beautiful. And those are the things that I didn't know, right? I didn't know that existed, and I didn't know you could have that. And so those are the kinds of things and people that I'm drawn to now personally in my life.
I agree completely. Yeah. You know, I said this once, I'll say it again. The people that believe that vulnerability is about weakness are the people that have never actually gotten vulnerable to find out, because it couldn't be farther from the truth.
Right. It doesn't even make sense, right? But that's exactly... that's exactly what happens. That's exactly the way it goes. The more vulnerable you are, those people are like, wow, that's so cool. And then, and doing that and taking, for me, in opening my heart and taking that chance, how it's actually worked for me is that I no longer fear. I'm who I am. And if someone does not, like that, or they're not okay with my vulnerability, I am, my self-esteem is not based upon what they think. So that's a pivotal piece of it. So I can continually put myself out there. And if someone doesn't resonate with me or doesn't do that, it used to be where, oh my God, I can't do that. I need to not be that way, or I need to the message in your head, the story you tell yourself, whatever that looks like. But part of that is also being able to be vulnerable with yourself and accept yourself and love yourself. And to me, that's the byproduct. And we talked early in this conversation about the manifestations. So when this other stuff changes, now the manifestations in my life the stories I described earlier are so far removed from anything in my life today that, it's like, even when I talk about it, I'm like, wow, I did see those things.
Yeah. Self-love is a game changer, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it doesn't get much press, and it's really sad. And it doesn't get much press because self-love isn't sexy. You know? It really isn't sexy. People want to go straight for the sexy stuff. And the truth of the matter is, self-love is the key to the kingdom.
It is the key. It is.
Because you're not going to have the relationship of your dreams if you haven't developed unconditional self-love. You're going to have some weird facsimile.
Yeah. And you know what? I think that relationship of your dreams, I don't know, that term to me seems sort of obscure. It's not really reasonable, because when you enter two people into any kind of a relationship, it's never just perfect. It's never just everything. And we're here to love and teach each other.
Yes.
And so as we're doing those processes, that the expectation of, oh, my perfect relationship or my perfect this or my perfect job or house or husband, or he has to look blah, 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 right?
Maybe ideal would be a better term.
Yeah, maybe ideal.
Or just a healthier relationship.
Yeah, or just having an intimate relationship, just a connected relationship.
Or interdependent would be another good. Interdependent,
that's my favorite, right? We've talked about that before. Yeah.
So if you could travel back in time briefly and just share one piece of wisdom with your 18-year-old self, what would it be?
That would clearly just be come out. Just come out now. The trajectory of my life would have been so much different, right? And I think I would not have been accepted at first. I'm sure my father probably would have beat me up or something, right? But I think later they would have been okay. And at the time, that's what I would tell myself, though, to just do it and to have the courage to I see a lot of fear in that. So, because then I know there's a lot of youth that are homeless and in shelters and places like that because they are thrown out by their families. So that's hard to say, but I think come out would be probably the best thing I could say to myself, and love yourself and find out who you are and don't lie to yourself and other people.
I certainly did my share of living a lie and the deception. I too got married at an early age. I came out at 24, and I didn't feel like I had a choice. I was at this point where I was either going to come out or I was going to die, because I couldn't stand the lie any longer. I couldn't put up with one more minute of the deception or the lie. It was like you either tell your secret or you just die, you know? And so I came out, but I agree with you, you know,
exactly. That's
you just have one experience and I have a completely different experience. And I would say the same thing to any listener. You know, if you're struggling with the whole come out thing and you're uncertain, I'm not saying it's going to be easy. It wasn't easy for most of us, but it's necessary.
Yeah,
I guarantee you that the pain that you think you're going to go through if you come out is far less than the pain you're going to go through if you don't come out.
100%. And you described it perfectly. And so our stories are different, but they're not, because what you just described is exactly the way I felt. I was either going to die or come out and be who I am. I got to that point. I got to that desperation, and I couldn't do it anymore. So the pain was great, and maybe that's what I needed, that pain to be so great to come into the space that I am currently. But boy, when you just said that really rang a bell. I remember wanting to just die, because I thought, oh, I will never be able to survive coming out, right? And there's a lot to that. I think people sometimes will not put enough emphasis to what the struggles are. I know that through the coaching program we were in, I talked to thousands of men all over the, probably even internationally, and many of the stories that you and I are talking about, they're all different, right? We all have different walks of life, professions, families, but those core parts of it, I found really common within us.
I've got a couple of rapid fire questions for you if you're ready for some rapid fire answers.
Okay. All right. Let's do this, Maddox. I knew you were going to do this.
He was not forewarned. He just knew.
Oh, I just knew he was going to, I knew he'd pull something out of his head. Yeah.
So when was the last time you cried, visually cried?
The last time I visually cried was when my boyfriend was leaving. last time. So this was a few weeks ago. It was the last time.
I say visually because oftentimes we cry inside without crying outside.
No, I was sitting there and he was at the airport. Like I was taking him to the airport. No, I was sitting there crying because I didn't want to, I didn't want him to go. So he was sitting there with me and I was visually crying. Yeah.
Well, and you just answered question number two, which was going to be, when was the last time you cried in the presence of another gay man?
Oh, yeah.
Because sometimes, and I ask those questions separately because it's different. Most of my life, I could have cried much easier in front of a straight person, male or female, than I could in front of another gay man.
Such an interesting question. I know that I didn't cry for about 20 years, period. I didn't cry. And so now I allow myself
Beautiful.
To feel. I allow myself to feel because I didn't.
And it's amazing, isn't it? For the person that doesn't allow themselves to cry because they think it's not okay, it's one of the most powerful and wonderful, loving things to do for yourself. I cry on a regular basis. I cry multiple times a week. And it's not tears of sadness. Oftentimes it's something that's just touched me very deeply. Occasionally it's sadness.
Yeah.
It's a variety of different things.
I will cry on other things too. Yeah, I agree. I will cry with, you know, my granddaughter, for instance, like she will do little things that it touches my heart. Mm-hmm. And a few times like, and I'm like, what is going on here? I'll be watching some kind of TV program and I'm like, getting teary eyed. And I'm like, oh, where's this coming from? But I've learned to allow it. And it's just part of who I am.
Allow it and honor it. Yes.
Honor it. Yes. Yeah.
So it's 40 years from now and you are a ghost at your own funeral. Yeah. And there's a variety of your gay peers there. What do you hope they will say about you?
What do I hope they'll say about me? That I walked through this life. He walked through this life as well as he could, and he gave a lot of love and a lot of compassion and was truly there for his loved ones. And hopefully that on how whatever level that he was a good dad and grandfather, I think those are probably my children, my grandchildren, they're just part of me. So that would be mostly them probably, but my gay friends or whatever, yes, absolutely. I would want them to know that they were safe. And they were loved and cared for, and that anybody that I'm hoping in 40 years from now, I'm hoping that there's a younger generation, Maddox, coming up that these conversations like this and the ones you're having with other gay men will give them a different experience in this lifetime than we had.
And my hope is that conversations like this will become more commonplace. Yeah. I find we tend to avoid anything that's in the deep end of the pool oftentimes, and we're missing out on some really, really rich experiences by not being willing to go a little deeper occasionally. So
I'm curious, if you just had to ask me some off the wall question, what would it be? What do you think somebody would ask me?
An off the wall question?
Yeah, like I wonder what somebody would like your listeners, because we're all gay, but we're also different. I wonder what off the wall or just off the cuff kind of thing that we could maybe address, just that might not be something that somebody would normally ask.
I'll take a stab at it.
All right.
Okay. As a gay man, what is the thing you value in life absolutely the most?
For me, it's my connection to God. The God I have, the universe, because that's the gateway for the rest of it.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Well, Craig, I want to say thank you so much for coming on the podcast as a guest. Thank you for so openly and vulnerably sharing your story, talking about the shadows, D, all of the above. It was amazing. And I just want to leave you with one thing.
Yeah.
And that is, you are indeed an authentic gay man.
Oh, thanks, Maddox. Thanks for having me. And really enjoyed our conversation as always. And yeah, it's love the work you're doing and reaching out to whoever needs this. So thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.